was now drying. "You're going to fail," Dagon snarled. I didn't reply. I slowly, carefully drew the final symbol without making a mistake. That was all the response he deserved. The bodies nearby and the splintered remains of the roller coaster around us vanished. A river cut through it, dark as deepest despair. A long, thin boat rode on it. For a moment, I saw two Dagons, one at the helm and one beneath me. Then the figure at the helm changed, morphing from the false god I'd been tricked into worshipping as a child into the being that had fathered me. His silvery hair, with its gold and blue streaks, rustled in a wind I couldn't feel as that lightning-like gaze met mine. Then he took in the bone shards on Dagon and around me.
"I see that neither of you have obeyed me,"
he said in the mildest of tones. But the waters that weren't really there rippled as if his anger was a strong current. "Father," I said, choosing the form of address I never used to his face. Then I got off Dagon, since he wouldn't dare try anything now. "Dagon has taken someone precious from me. I need your help to get him back." He said only,
"Who murdered all these?"
With a glance at the shards littering us, and the many skeletons I now couldn't see.
"She did?"
Dagon said at once. Then he got up and flung the excess bone fragments off his clothes for emphasis.
"She killed every last one of my loyal servants."
"Who you brought with you so you could kill me," I countered. His icy blue gaze had regained most of its arrogance now that he no longer had a bone knife against his only remaining eye.
"No, I told them not to kill you. Deny that, if you dare."
"Did I forget the part where you were trying to enslave me to use my blood as your latest drug trade?" I asked caustically.
"He came for the Simargal,"
I told the warden, who watched us silently. "You revoked his ownership of silver and gave him to me, but Dagon used a trace on silver's blood to ambush us. I killed those demons in self-defense." "Mostly true."
"You lured me here," Dagon sputtered. "You had traps."
"Enough."
The warden's command made Dagon clamp his mouth shut. I would have enjoyed that, but I was too desperate. Dagon killed my companion. I fought the lump in my throat as pain of a different kind strafed me. Not physical, yet in its own way, more intense than what I'd felt when I'd been drawing the symbols. "But you can bring him back." The warden gave me a diffident glance.
"If you're referring to the man who was with you before, he did not pass through my section of the netherworld."
"No, he didn't," I agreed. Dagon glared at me, silently warning me to say no more. Dagon kept his soul inside him instead of sending it on. The warden was silent again. Moments turned into minutes. I wanted to demand he say something, but I didn't. Dagon wasn't the only one who kept glancing at the waters beneath the warden's boat. They weren't rippling anymore. They were roiling.
"If that is true," the warden finally said, "all I can do is free his soul to send it to the destination meant for it."
"No," I said at once. "Dagon tricked him into dealing it away. If you send his soul on, you condemn him."
"I condemn no one."
Was that a hint of weariness in his tone?
"I only guard the gateway to the side of the netherworld assigned to me. Whoever passes through it has already sealed their own fate."
I was about to rail at him. Then I remembered what I'd felt when my other nature had been in control. That half came from him, so it stood to reason that it was a milder version of his mentality, psyche, whatever. If so, sentiment meant nothing. I'd have to use something else to sway him. What would resonate with the warden if emotions were irrelevant? Balancing the scales? My other half hadn't felt grief over Ian, but it had taken offense at being robbed of what I considered mine.
It had also felt that killing Dagon and his men was the appropriate response. If my father had a similar sense of obligatory recompense, maybe I could shift it. I brought you valuable information about Dagon hoarding souls, and you give me nothing in return, I said. Your unpaid debt to me stands that much taller.
Oh?
The faintest hints of disbelief, or was it scorn, tinged the warden's tone.
What's unpaid debt? I am your progeny.
Modern speech failed me in my urgency. Dagon had me raped, tortured, and murdered for decades. But you gave him the lightest of reprimands by disallowing him further human worship. That is your oldest debt to me. Dagon took your obvious disregard for your progeny as weakness and began keeping some of the souls he was supposed to deliver through your part of the netherworld. Moreover, when he found out I was still alive, he ignored your command and set out to re-enslave me. Even if I also disobeyed your command, I did so. After thousands of years, Dagon's contempt of you is so great. He disobeyed you mere days after discovering I still lived. And now I get no recompense for bringing all this to your attention.
The warden's silver gaze landed on Dagon. The demon took a step backward, and my father's hand rammed into his chest, disappearing inside Dagon's body. Dagon shuddered, his single eye glowing such a bright shade of red, I thought it might spontaneously combust.
She speaks the truth.
The warden's voice rose until it boomed as he withdrew his hand.
You are filled with souls.
Now I knew my father's voice sounded like thunder when he was angry. Dagon dropped to his knees, either in fear or pain, since he continued to shudder as if my father's hand was still feeling around inside his chest.
My lord, warden,
I clutched my hands over my ears at what came out of the warden's mouth. It was too loud, too awful, too crowded, as if every voice trapped in the worst part of the netherworld had screamed all at once. Then he shut his mouth, and that horrifying sound was replaced with silence, heavy enough to suffocate.
Chapter 44.
You have indeed done well, the warden said, turning to me.
It was praise I'd never heard from him.
Dagon will be punished. You will never see him again.
In that moment, I was genuinely afraid of him. Whatever my father was, a lesser god, different sort of demon, former or current angel, other type of celestial being, ancient alien for all I knew, his power defied comprehension. Tenok had been right to warn me against letting that half of myself fully out. Maybe there wasn't anything inherently evil about it, but that much power was dangerous when it didn't come with a normal conscience. It was like a bomb. Drop it on the right target and it could save lives. Drop it on the wrong one.
My lord! Dagon cried.
Then he fell forward, clutching his head the way I had when the warden had let out that otherworldly roar. From the way Dagon rocked and moaned, it was as if he were hearing it directly into his head.
What about Ian's soul?
I asked. The warden's gaze turned fathomless. For an instant, I felt the same mindless, helpless feeling I had in dreams when I was falling from a great height and knew nothing could save me. Then he blinked, and I was staring into bright beams of silver again.
He goes where he has sent himself, as does Dagon.
My emotions cleaved. Dagon would finally get the justice he deserved. Everyone I'd promised to avenge would be avenged. I would be avenged. Ian would too, but he wouldn't be at peace. No, if I let my father do this, Ian would be worse off than he had been when he'd almost died in the Australian outback as a human. Ever been lost? Ian had roughly asked when speaking of that time. The worst part was knowing no one cared enough to save you. That's what you remember forever. Not the physical pain or the never-ending fear, but the despair of being utterly alone and knowing you'll die that way. Ian was lost like that now. He'd stay lost that way forever, unless I did something very reckless, with the most powerful being I'd ever encountered. One who didn't feel a shred of love for me, because his nature wasn't wired that way. Given the choice, I'd always rather go down fighting. So would I, I'd replied. Time to prove it. No deal, I told the warden. He paused. No surprise that he'd already dismissed me and turned away. Now he turned back, the angry twitch to his brow seeming to say, "Who the hell do you think you're talking to?" No deal, I repeated in a stronger tone. Taking Dagon to whatever torment awaits him might make the two of you even, but it isn't nearly adequate compensation for me.
Your additional compensation is not fearing any retribution for all the demon lives you have taken,
the warden replied. Then he pulled Dagon into his boat. He didn't struggle. Dagon didn't even seem to notice. He was still consumed by whatever had him shaking and clutching his head. The two of them and the river started to fade, wood fragments from the blown-up roller coaster now peeking through those dark currents. Panic made me shout, "Wait!" with all the emotion my father couldn't feel. Then I lashed myself. Stick to terms he understands, scales and balances, not feelings and needs. Everyone who makes a deal with you has to fill your boat with adequate recompense or they forfeit their lives, right? Well, my boat is still empty, because I don't want exemption from retribution over killing those demons. I only want Ian's soul returned to his fully healed body.
The warden rematerialized, saying,
"You cannot withdraw one soul from Dagon without freeing them all,"
in a tone that was as close to snapping as I'd heard from him. "Then do that." I didn't want to cry, but I couldn't stop the tears that trickled down my cheeks. Dagon only got them through deals he struck. Knowing him, none of them were fair.
"Fairness is up to another to judge, not me,"
the warden replied in that borderline curt tone.
"Once again, you're giving me nothing!"
It tore out of me with all the pain I couldn't force down. I tried to reason with him using scales and balances. It hadn't worked. Now, even if it made no difference, he'd know every damn thing I'd been holding back, both now and in the past. "You sent Tenok to rescue me, but that was more to keep Dagon from getting too powerful than to save me, wasn't it? You only told Tenok to look in on me afterward, to keep tabs on me, so I didn't do something similarly problematic with my powers. How else would he know to keep warning me about them? But Tenok chose to help me heal. He chose to make me his family. You never did. I hope that's because of some cosmic prohibition. Whatever the reason, if you think we are even because you're finally punishing Dagon and you'll shield me from other demons' wrath, let me tell you how you're not even close."
I swiped at my tear-soaked face before getting right up in his. His arms folded across his chest. I ignored the subtle warning. He'd either kill me for this next part or he wouldn't, but he wasn't going to intimidate me into staying silent.
"You sired a half-mortal child. As such, I have emotional needs. You knew that, and you refused to meet them even when I was so broken I wanted to die. Your debt to me, therefore, is enormous. I'm offering a way for you to settle it cheap. Restore Ian's soul back to his body. I don't care what you have to do to make that happen, just like you didn't care what I had to do to get the mortal-driven need for love, support, and companionship you denied me for the better part of 5,000 years. If you don't, you are choosing to leave your debt unpaid. Whatever big deal you might be in this plane of existence, In my world, that makes you nothing more than another worthless, deadbeat dad. The warden's eyes were blazing when I finished, until I had to look away or risk being blinded by them. I waited, expecting something terrible to occur. Dagon bolting out of the warden's boat, wasn't it? But that's what happened. The warden caught him after only a few steps. Then he grasped Dagon by his long blonde hair and put his hand flat over Dagon's chest, speaking in a language I'd never heard before. "What are you doing?" Dagon hissed, saving me the trouble. The warden didn't reply. Multiple lights began showing through the tattered remains of Dagon's clothes. I sucked in a breath. "Please let those be what I think they are, please." Dagon began to scream. The sounds grew into high-pitched shrieks. Then he tried to run again. The warden lifted him by the hair until Dagon's feet were sawing at the air. All the while, those lights moved farther up Dagon's body. When they reached Dagon's throat, they glowed until his skin resembled a lampshade thrown over a spotlight. "What's happening?" I had to shout to be heard.
"The souls are eating their way out of him,"
my father replied in his normal, dispassionate voice.
"The more of his essence they devour, the faster they can free themselves."
Devour his essence? That sounded ominous, but I'd worry about the ramifications later. I watched, hope building as those lights crawled ever higher. Then, like fireworks shooting out, they burst from Dagon's open, screaming mouth. There were so many of them. I counted 13 or 14 before they vanished from sight. I whirled, looking back toward Ian's body, but I still couldn't see it. All I saw was the dark river flowing around me. My father dropped Dagon. He fell much the same way he had when I'd stabbed his eyes out, but he wasn't dead. His closed eyes were now as whole as my own. Both of them.
"It is done,"
the warden said in a flat tone.
"Your terms of reimbursement have been met."
I stared at him as I approached. Then I did something I never thought I'd have the courage or desire to do. Put my arms around him. "Thank you." I'd be in less pain if I hugged a power station transformer shooting electricity from every wire, but I didn't let go even when his arm stayed loose and he didn't hug me back. Something flowed over me, though breaching even the pain. A sensation that felt like an otherworldly caress. Then it stopped as he stepped out of my arms.
"Time is short. I must tell you the repercussions for this."
"Whatever they are, I'll deal with them," I promised.
"Yes, you will," he said darkly. "For now, Dagon must be returned to your world, instead of being punished in mine."
The warden held out his hand. Dagon was suddenly sucked away, as if a giant vortex had opened up and swallowed him. I was still gaping after that when the warden resumed speaking.
"Dagon will be weakened by what was torn out of him from the escaping souls. I have also taken away his ability to teleport, and I will ensure that he cannot go near your companion without paralyzing pain. Thus, he will not be able to seek vengeance against you by killing him. But Dagon will regain his strength in time. When he does, he will come for you."
Oh, yes. He'd see this as my stealing power from him twice. First, when he was forbidden to seek human worship. Then, when losing the extra souls he'd hoarded to stave off his own death. He wouldn't rest until I was dead. No matter how long it took.
"Let him come. I had no intention of backing out of my vow to kill him, either.
I only hoped those I'd promised justice to could forgive me for delaying it a bit longer. Then again, they of all people should understand. If they could have saved a loved one from Dagon, I had no doubt that they would have."
"Some of the souls that were released are very dark,"
the warden went on.
"The oldest ones will be slowest to regenerate, since their bodies have long been dust. But when they do, the power they consumed from Dagon's essence will make them formidable. You must hunt down the evil ones to limit the havoc they will wreak, since it was your demand that caused them to be freed.
I nodded.
Hunting down those who use their abilities to harm others is what I do. I won't fail.
Gods, please let me not fail, since I was responsible for this. I took his barest inclination to the right as a returned nod.
Toward this end, I have removed all their memories connected to Dagon and their time spent trapped inside him. This will limit their knowledge of their new abilities. It will also spare them from being...
He paused as if choosing a word.
Broken over what they experienced in their imprisonment.
He finished.
I got myself before I said something caustic. So he did understand the concept of extreme mental and emotional trauma. He'd probably removed those memories only to limit the people's dangerousness, since a psychotic, powerful, evil person was a bigger threat than a normal, powerful, evil person. But whatever his motivation, it meant less suffering for Ian and for the rest of them.
Wait.
He'd removed all memories connected to Dagon?
All of them? Will Ian remember anything about these past few weeks, if all of it happened in direct connection with his deal with Dagon? My father stared at me, unblinking.
No, he will not.
Chapter 45. Pain tore into me, as sudden and ferocious as the Wraith attack. I forced myself to nod, to pretend that my father hadn't just ripped my heart out and scrubbed the side of his boat with it. Ian was alive. Nothing else mattered. Not even the fact that his only memories of me would be as the law-worshipping bitch he'd thought it helped murder his friend's child. It was for the best, I told myself. Dagon would be gunning for me, plus many other demons for my slaughter of their kind. I also had several powerful evil souls to hunt down before they became even more dangerous and deadly. Ian's best chance, now that he was finally free of Dagon, was to stay as far from me as possible. My father hadn't intended it, but he'd done me a favor. This would keep Ian safe better than I ever could. My pain was such a small price to pay. Besides, Ian and I wouldn't have lasted. He'd said he could have loved me, but could and did were very far apart. Much like the distance between Ian saying I was his, but not saying that he was mine. He'd ended his life to stop me from making a deal with Dagon. But he'd probably known Dagon would kill him anyway, making his actions as much a fuck you to his old nemesis as they were a sacrifice to me. In short, if I looked at it coldly, Ian had never promised me anything beyond the moment. Ian reveled in here and now, and there was value in enjoying that. But I would always want more, and it was no doubt beyond him to give it to me.
There is more,
the warden said.
Of course there was, when consequences were the currency. You are now as vulnerable to death as any vampire.
What? Incredibly, he looked away as if unable to hold my stare.
It was never your power that resurrected you. You do have the ability, but you have not cultivated it. Every time you came back, it was I who raised you. Once word of what I have done here reaches others, I will be removed as warden and will no longer be able to raise you. Thus, you must take care of your life. You, like Dagon, now only have one of them.
It wasn't hearing about my new mortality that made tears spring to my eyes. It was knowing he had been checking in on me all these years, just in a way I'd never suspected. He'd also admitted that he was sacrificing his position as warden to do as I'd asked. This wasn't merely him satisfying a debt I'd forced him to acknowledge. This was much, much more.
You do care for me, in your way,
Wonder tinged my voice. He looked back at me, that flash of emotion gone, and his face the impassive mask I was used to.
Your companion is of Tenok's bloodline.
Once again, I was taken aback. He knew Menkaris had sired Ian, and Tenok had sired Menkaris?
Tenok could regenerate from a similar state of decomposition. I have activated that same power in your companion. Give him blood, and his body will fully heal within hours instead of weeks.
Thank you, Father, I said, but found myself speaking to the air. The warden, his boat, and the river had vanished. A soft whine made me turn around. Silver lay next to Ian's body. He had a paw over Ian's head as if seeking to protect him from the damage that had already been done to it. The sight was heartbreakingly sweet. Until I heard what sounded like twigs snapping, and Ian's desiccated arm yanked Silver close. Then the Simargle screeched as Ian's bony jaws clamped down on him. No! I shouted, snatching Silver away. Blood dripped from Ian's fangs. He snapped them at me, trying to tear into any available flesh again. His eyes were sightless, his body was more bones than skin, and his hair had turned pure white. I would have been terrified if I hadn't seen this sort of thing before. Tenok could wither until he looked exactly like this. It had been a valuable trick that fooled his enemies into thinking Tenok was dead when he wasn't. But it had also left Tenok mindlessly hungry until he regenerated. Now Ian had just gotten a mouthful of Silver's opiate-equivalent blood. That, plus his ravenous state, and gods only knew what powers he'd absorbed from Dagon after devouring his way out of the demon, made him dangerous. Worse, it wouldn't be long until police arrived. All the explosions, even in this remote area, had to have attracted someone's notice. I had to get Ian secured and away from innocent people. All before he healed enough to realize who the hell I was. I couldn't do this alone. I needed help, fast. I held on to Silver as I ran over and grabbed the heaviest piece of theme park debris I could carry. Then I dragged it over to Ian, who'd already started to crawl in a mindless search for blood. I dropped it on top of Ian, wincing as I heard bones break. Then, still holding Silver, who wouldn't stop whimpering, I ran into the mirrored funhouse. Amid the wreckage, I found the mobile phone Ian had insisted I have in case of emergency. This definitely qualified. I scrolled through the contacts, glad he'd taken the time to fill some of them in. Once I found the name I was looking for, I dialed. Answer, I silently urged when it only rang. Come on, Ian, a British voice said on the first ring. Tell me you're still in New Jersey, I burst out, not bothering to return the greeting.
We're on our way to you,
was the answer I never expected.
Ian rang us from a different mobile half an hour ago and said he needed us. Where is he? And what are the ashes he told us? We must recover if we saw them.
The burning in my chest had to be my heart splitting apart. After vowing not to involve them because he couldn't bear to endanger them, Ian must have also called Bones when he went to get Rani and Fenkir's bodies. He'd made sure someone was coming to help me if the Wraith ended up killing us both. Why else would Ian tell them to recover the ashes he knew I'd rise from? If Ian had thought he'd still be alive too, he could have recovered my ashes himself. Ian needs blood. My voice was a rasp because my throat just closed off. Buckets of it, and restraints.
What happened?
Bones asked in an icy tone. I don't have time to explain. Damn it, did I hear sirens? How long could I hold off the police? Just hurry.
With the new stop to get blood, we'll arrive within 2 hours, he said crisply. And if you're responsible for what's happened to Ian, you will regret it.
Good enough, I replied, and hung up. Chapter 46. An hour and a half later, dawn splashed the darkness with its first bright rays, highlighting the helicopter that had just landed. Bones jumped out, dragging several lengths of thick chains behind him. His brows barely rose at the destruction in the former theme park, and the policeite mesmerized into holding the perimeter, but he gave the skeletons scattered everywhere a longer look.
They stink of sulfur, were his first words. How many of them were demons?
All of them, I said, still struggling with the draped form beneath me. I'd frozen time around Ian for an hour, but I'd run out of strength to hold the spell these past 30 minutes.
All?
Bones repeated in disbelief.
Then how?
He stopped speaking when I drew back the tarp. Ian's face was a thing of nightmares, if you didn't have my unending gratitude that he was still alive. Bones stared at him.
Bloody fucking hell.
Less shock, more chains, I said wearily. Don't let how Ian looks fool you. He's incredibly strong. And after everything that had happened, I was running on fumes.
What happened?
Thankfully, Bones's question came with action. He sprang forward, slinging chains around Ian while avoiding the jaws that snapped at him. Once Bones had Ian encased from neck to feet, he picked him up as if he weighed nothing and carried him toward the helicopter. Silver, I called out. You can come out now. The Simargle flew out of the funhouse, one wing still bloody from Ian's fangs snagging it when I'd snatched Silver away from him. He landed right in my arms. Understandably, the events of the past night had left him very shaken.
I didn't know your dog had wings, a delighted voice called out.
Then I saw a flash of drab brown hair as Cat jumped out of the helicopter.
Where did- Oh shit, who's that?
Ian,
Bones replied shortly.
Open the cooler, kitten. We'll need everything in it.
I climbed in after Bones, relieved to see vast quantities of bagged blood when Cat opened the cooler in the back. I set Silver safely out of Ian's reach and grabbed a bag, putting it to Ian's mouth. He tore into it so ferociously, half of it landed on us.
Wait,
Bones said.
I'll hold him.
His power snapped out, invisible and potent. Ian's head froze, and I emptied the next bag into his mouth without any splatters.
What happened?
Cat asked, her head swinging back and forth between Ian, Silver, and the bodies outside the helicopter. Demon attack? Now that we were finally safe, all my weariness hit me, leaving me unable to speak in complete sentences. Eat some bone for weapons, but rest have to go.
Here.
Cat handed me a blood bag, then shoved it back in my face when I pushed it away. You look terrible, Veritas. Don't worry, we've got plenty for Ian. You can take this one. I took it because I didn't have the strength to argue. Drinking it made me feel slightly less like I'd pass out. The bones, I mumble again.
I'll take care of them, Cat said,
jumping out after giving Silver a quick pat on the head. Bones kept feeding Ian blood bags. Muscle and sinew started slowly reknitting themselves in the glimpses I caught, though Bones's body blocked most of Ian from my view. How long until he can think normally again? I asked. Bones cast a glance at me.
Is this his first time regenerating? Or has he been hiding this ability from us for a while?
First time, I replied, leaving it at that.
Half a day, at least,
Bones stated. I closed my eyes. Good. That'll give me enough time.
To do what?
I didn't bother opening my eyes, said Ian up the way he last remembers. It wouldn't be in Poland, but I could keep the rest of my promise. I'll tell you what to say so you can fill in his memory gaps.
What memory gaps? And what about the ashes Ian is so keen that we collect?
I ignored the sharpness in Bones' tone. Don't worry about the ashes. All you need to worry about is repeating what I'm about to tell you.
Why don't you tell Ian yourself?
Instantly. I closed my eyes, a reflex against the truth. He won't remember me.
What?
Short version is he pissed off the wrong demon and lost his memory of the past few weeks. Now I opened my eyes so he could see how serious I was. The demon got away and he'll be coming for me, so it's safer for Ian not to remember any of it. Bones's dark gaze bored into mine.
You don't intend to even tell him you're his wife.
No, I don't. It flung out of me with all the pain I was fighting not to feel. Then I sighed. All of you were right. Ian didn't suddenly fall in love. Circumstances forced us to fake being married. The rumor spread, and we used it to our advantage. Don't worry. I'll make sure everyone knows it wasn't real. I'd have to convince Shun Chong and the enforcers to recant their witness of the ceremony, but I'd face tougher obstacles. Shun Chong might even be happy to help eradicate my marriage.
Who is the demon that did all this?
Dagon. I hated saying his name, but Bone should know it, so he'd know who to watch out for. My father made it impossible for Dagon to go near Ian without paralyzing pain, but none of you get that safeguard, so watch your backs. Good news is, Dagon's very weak now. Bad news is, he'll heal. Bones' brows went up.
Your father? Who is he?
Damn it, I was so exhausted I'd let that slip. No one you need to worry about. Got the cops sweeping up the demon, Bones, Cat announced, coming back in the helicopter. We'll pick them up after we get Ian and you set up. Then we'll haul them to a crematorium and incinerate them. Can't take them now because we don't have room in the chopper, but we should have it all done by noon.
Good, I said, closing my eyes again. Thank you.
In the meantime, take Ian to a whorehouse capable of throwing a carnival-themed orgy. Don't worry, I'm buying.
What?
Cat gasped while Bone said,
Why?
In a steely tone. I made a blood vow. Now I didn't open my eyes because I was afraid they'd see the tears welling in them. Besides, I added with a flash of despairing humor, if Ian does have any memories of the events before the past few weeks, that's where he'll expect to be.
What about you?
Bones's tone was softer, almost pitying.
What will you do now?
Don't worry, I said with a short laugh. Silver came over, putting his head beneath my arm as if to remind me that I wasn't alone. I petted him as I said in all truthfulness, I have plenty of things to keep me occupied.
Epilogue. Ian. Someone needed to stop the bloody hammering or he'd murder whoever was doing it. Ian opened one eye, startled to discover the terrible din came from inside his head. He ran his hand along it, feeling for wounds. Then both eyes opened when he felt nothing except the smoothness of his scalp beneath his hair. That wasn't right. He'd been injured, hadn't he?
Finally awake, a familiar voice said.
Ian turned, seeing Crispin lounging in a chair not far from him. Crispin's hair was a dreadful shade of dirty blonde, and he stank as if he'd been swimming in demon sweat. He was clothed, though, while Ian was naked as the day he'd been born. Then giggles drew Ian's attention to the rest of the room. Women naked, except for leonine body paint, frolicked on the other side of the large area. Men wearing gazelle markings walked past them, avoiding the fire hoops that were in their path. And was that a car full of clowns?
Where are we? And what are you doing here?
Ian demanded.
Cat will kill you if she catches you at a bordello.
I'm not the one indulging,
Crispin replied, eyeing him with an intensity that belied his languid tone.
I'm babysitting you after your hangover.
Head hurt? Like the very devil,
Ian moaned, then found himself snapping.
The fire rings are there for a reason, or do none of you have a proper work ethic?
At the next group of painted whores who walked past them. Crispin's brows rose.
Hardly their main performance objective, is it?
No, it wasn't. Why did he care if they jumped through the fire rings? And why did he feel the urge to praise the clowns for showing markedly more enthusiasm for their roles?
Don't bother,
Ian called out when the faux lionesses and gazelles started to line up before the fire hoops. When they took that as an invitation to turn their attentions to him, Ian brushed their hands away.
Start without me. Go play amongst yourselves.
Something wrong?
Crispin asked, still in that mild tone. Yes. Not only did his head ache as if Lucifer's hammer itself was pounding away at it, he had the near uncontrollable urge to check the back of it for wounds. And why was he utterly uninterested in the erotic spectacle going on in front of him? Not only did he have no desire to join, he could barely be bothered to watch.
How did I get here? He asked Crispin.
A dark brow arched.
You don't remember?
He remembered... blimey, not much. Had he been upset about something and decided to numb the pain with shagging? That sounded right, but being here somehow felt wrong.
What did I tell you about playing amongst yourselves? He snapped when a faux gazelle and lion crawled forward and began stroking his legs. Off you go. There's a good lass and lad.
They walked away, pouting. Ian turned to Crispin.
Are you certain I wanted to be here? In truth, I couldn't be less interested, and look at him.
He shook his cock at Crispin for emphasis.
Limp as a dead snake, he is.
Crispin pointedly kept his gaze on Ian's face.
I can hardly offer my assistance.
Never fancied you that way. Good thing, too, since we turned out to be cousins.
In all seriousness, though, Crispin, why am I here? Why do you stink like demon, and why does my head feel as though it's been split open recently?
Something filled Crispin's gaze. Ian's sense of unease grew. His friend was about to lie to him. Even if he couldn't see it in Crispin's gaze, he felt it all the way to his bones.
I smell like this because we fought the very brossed-off owner of the red dragon sauce you stole, Crispin said. Your recent drinking rampage wasn't enough, so you stole your own sauce. Drank it until you decided lying about being married was the height of hilarity, then called me when the sauce's demon owner came after you. We killed him, you set the sauce free, and decided to celebrate at this whorehouse. I stayed only to make sure you didn't do anything else. Supremely stupid.
Crispin was lying. Ian's surety grew with every merciless hammering in his head. So why did parts of that story feel familiar?
This isn't right, Ian said aloud. You're lying, and I'm not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be... where?
At once, that intentness was back in Crispin's gaze.
Where are you supposed to be? You tell me, Ian snapped. And where is...
He stopped. That sense of wrongness roared to the forefront, growing until Ian got up and began to pace. Something more was going on than Crispin's lies. He found his hands running over the back of his head again. His hair was white for some reason, but that didn't concern him as much as searching for wounds that still weren't there. Why was he so certain they should be? Why did it feel so wrong that he was here with Crispin instead of somewhere else? With someone else.
I was about to say a name, Ian said slowly, but now I have no idea which one. Why was I about to say a name I suddenly can't remember? What the hell is going on?
Crispin rose, his gaze flicking to the horrors that Ian had already forgotten about.
Leave, Crispin told them. All of you.
Deja vu had Ian whipping around to stare at the horrors filing out of the room. This had happened before, but not with Crispin. Someone else. Who?
Who?
A woman's voice whispered across his mind, her tone more amused than mocking.
Are you getting them out of the way because you're intending to fight me?
Where is she?
Ian found himself demanding. He didn't remember moving, but suddenly his hands were on Crispin's shoulders, and he was shaking him as if he could rattle the truth out of him. Crispin's eyes went wide as he stared back at where Ian had been moments before.
You teleported!
It took a few moments for Crispin's stunned statement to penetrate. Then Ian scoffed,
More lies, mate! That is no lie!
Crispin shoved Ian back, then gave him a look of growing expectancy.
See if you can do it again. Where do you think you should be right now?
Shower, he found himself saying. I don't need to tell you what you smell like.
The words had barely formed in his mind, when Ian was staring at old blue tiles and grout that had seen far better days. He burst out of the bathroom into the adjoining bedroom, shouting, Crispin! When a feminine squeal stopped him.
Who are you? How did you get here?
The petite brunette on the bed demanded. She wasn't alone, and her companion gave him a very annoyed look.
Get out,
he snapped. I paid for an hour. Ian ignored them as he left the bedroom.
Crispin!
He shouted again when he reached the hallway. A whoosh of power, then Crispin flew up the stairs. Ian had started down the hallway toward him when it suddenly dissolved into the blackest of rivers. A thin boat sailed over it, its single occupant appearing out of mists made of darkness. Crispin's shout of,
Angel of Death!
Should have worried Ian. So should the cloaked skeleton turning its bony face toward him while raising its scythe. Instead, Ian found himself saying,
Don't fret. What you're seeing isn't what he really looks like. On this side of the veil, you see what you fear.
How did he know that? Were those his words? Or were they someone else's? The figure's mouth stretched in a terrifying version of a smile. Then that skull dissolved into dark bronze skin, a handsome visage, hair the color of a cotton candy mistake, and eyes that flashed with bright silvery beams.
You do remember,
the thing said.
I told her you would not, to ease her pain in case you cared nothing for her. But when emotions run deep, they can never be fully erased.
Her. Someone had been stolen from him.
I don't remember much.
Fear crept over Ian, but not fear of dying. He was afraid this creature would leave without telling him what he needed to know.
But I want to. Tell me what I lost. I cannot restore all that was removed. Even the little I can restore could break your mind,
the creature said bluntly.
Ian?
Crispin had recovered from his shock enough to start edging toward him.
Don't! It's too dangerous!
His urgency skyrocketed. He needed the memories that had been taken from him. Risks didn't matter. Crispin's objections didn't matter. He'd knock his mate through the wall if he tried to stop him again.
Give them back to me, he told the creature.
The thing put his hand on Ian's head. Images blasted through his mind, fragmented and without context. A tiny blonde law guardian fighting him before changing into a statuesque woman with the same platinum, gold, and blue hair as that creature. Flashes of a waterfall, then a castle. Why was he fighting to save a flying dog? And what was this?
By my blood, you are my wife.
Feelings ripped through the next set of images, her body entwined with his.
Mine.
Her blood on his lips.
Mine.
So many demons.
Protect her.
Blood and salt strafing the air.
Must save her.
Silver eyes staring in his pleadingly. I can't just let you die. Then two knives ramming into his skull. One he'd never seen. The other he'd shoved through himself. Had he died? That Stygian river suddenly rose up and swallowed him. He screamed, but nothing came out. Then he tried to run, to move, to do something. He couldn't. He had no body. The darkness had devoured him whole, but he wasn't alone in it. Something else was here.
What was it?
It came nearer.
No. No. No!
He came back to reality on his knees, blood pouring from his eyes, mouth, nose, and ears. After a panicked moment, he realized the other world was gone. So was the creature who'd stuffed these memory shards back into his head. Crispin was beside him, while a few prostitutes and a disgruntled client clustered at the other end of the hallway.
Ian,
Crispin was saying.
Speak to me, mate.
Ian wiped the blood off, endlessly relieved that he still had a body that could bleed. Then he paused, sniffing his hand. A quick lick revealed what he'd suspected. His blood now tasted like a milder form of red dragon. Why? One person had the answers. He didn't know much, but he knew that. If the little vixen thought she could run away without telling him the rest of what he'd lost, she didn't know who she was dealing with. Ian got up.
Your trousers, he told the annoyed customer, lighting his gaze up with green. Give them to me.
The man took off his trousers and handed them over. Ian put them on. They didn't fit, but it hardly mattered. He went down the stairs, ignoring Crispin's fluttering behind him, and took a coat off one of the hooks by the door. Crispin finally grabbed him hard enough to spin him around.
"Where do you think you're going?"
"Where am I going?" he repeated, then laughed. His memory was in pieces. His abilities might now include teleporting. His blood was wrong, and he was about to run headlong into a demon war, if he guessed rightly about the parts he could remember. But for some reason, he felt better than he ever had. In fact, if this feeling was a drug, he was never going to get clean.
"Yes, where are you going?" Crispin urged.
Ian laughed.
"To get my wife."
This is Tavia Gilbert. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Shades of Wicked, a Night Rebel novel by Janine Frost, presented by William Morrow and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Executive Producer, Jennifer Lopes. Text copyright 2018 by Janine Frost. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.